You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Well, hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Laura Bratton. So I don't know if you knew this, but the way this works for me is that I do the interview, I come up with all the questions, I have a conversation, and then I pop back in here and I record the introduction. And I have to admit that after this conversation, I was really very inspired, and I'm looking forward to you hearing this conversation. So Laura and I talk about her incredible story of losing her vision or her sight as a teenager. And she describes this as a traumatic transition. So we talk about that transition and the grief and anxiety that came with that change for her. Laura shares honestly about her journey. She talks about the anxiety, the depression, and then ultimately how she learned to harness the grit and gratitude in order to adapt and thrive in her life. And she has. So I asked Laura to share with us what it was like for her to be a kid going through this. And I truly, when I wrote that question, I wasn't even sure if that was a good question or not, because our own experience in life is just ours. And it's sometimes really hard to know what the difference is when other people are not going through the same thing. But the reason I asked, and Laura was kind enough to share with me all of the answers that she had, the reason I asked is because I think that I hope that it's to bring some awareness for those of us who do not have this experience. We have not experienced life without sight to what somebody else's experience is, what Laura's experience was like. Specifically, I ask her about high school because in my experience with high school, it can be rough. And so I was curious how that went for her, and she very kindly shared several of the things that she did and how she thrived in that experience. Along the way, we also talk about Southern accents, favorite spots in nature, and what it means to truly support someone through challenging times. I think you're going to love this. So let's do it. Laura Bratton, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. Are you ready for a chat today?
I'm ready. Thank you for the opportunity.
I'm so happy you're here. So I begin all of my interviews asking my guests, what part of the world do they call home? Where are you talking to me today?
So I'm from Greenville, South Carolina. So the northern upstate part of South Carolina.
I hear you've got a pretty, you've got a southern accent, I would say. A South Carolina.
It's obvious I'm from the southeast, right?
I guess. Well, I'm further south than you, but I'm in the tropics, so I don't have a deep south accent. My joke is I live so far south I have to drive north to get to the south. All right. So in a second, we're going to start the interview, but I want to ask you one more warm-up question, which is about what is something that you do to take care of yourself that you or somebody else would call self-care?
So for self-care, exercising and being in nature is most important for me. That grounds me, calms me. Absolutely love it.
Fantastic. I love that. When we talk about nature, what kind of nature do you like? Do you go to the forest? Do you like to go to the beach?
Anything outside pretty much, but the beach is my favorite spot.
Mine too. Mine too.
To me, there's nothing better than walking on the beach and just the ocean, the sand, the shells. It's incredibly healing and energizing.
I think so too. All right. So the topic of today that we're going to talk about, which is something that I think you've probably talked about a lot over the years, is your story of losing your sight, your vision as a teenager. And that is a massive life change. Can we start by you going through, which I'm sure you've told this a million times, tell us the backstory of how this happened. How did you lose your sight?
So at the age of 9, I was diagnosed with a very rare retinal disease. So the cells in my retina started dying. Perfectly healthy, no accidents that caused it. And still now, it does not have a definite name. It's just a very rare retinal disease. I was diagnosed when I was 9, but I didn't start losing a major amount of sight until a teenager. So pretty much in those 4 years of high school is when I lost all my sight. So what I have now is very, very limited light perception. So what that means is if I'm at the beach and in a gorgeous day, you know, I know it's sunny, I know, or I know it's cloudy or, you know, rainy or foggy. So I can tell that perception, but not any usable day-to-day vision.
All right. So no diagnosis. So nine. At nine, did you know or understand like the idea of what it would mean to lose your vision? Like I'm curious about that.
Brilliant question. So I knew it cognitively, but I didn't know it emotionally. Because as a nine-year-old who could see and was playing basketball and riding her bike and climbing trees and doing all the things, I just assumed that's how life would always be. Even though I had received the diagnosis, my parents could grasp the reality, but not as a nine-year-old, I couldn't grasp it. The reality, it became real as a teenager when I started losing a significant amount of sight.
So when you say as a teenager, then you were in high school, was it rapid when you were a teenager or was there, so you were diagnosed before you had any symptoms?
Yes, the very, very, very minimal symptoms.
I'm trying to think. So did you go to an eye doctor? How did that, do you know how that happened? Because I don't even know if I took my kids to the eye doctor when they were nine.
Great question. So my mom is a teacher, so she is hyper aware of what sort of where I should be as a nine-year-old, what I should be doing. And she noticed I was just holding books a little bit closer to my face than normal. Or I would walk up to the TV and sit in the chair closer to the TV rather than just sitting anywhere on the couch or any chair like I used to. So there were just slight changes that I didn't even notice. Again, as a child, I didn't notice, and they were very minimal. So that's why my parents scheduled an appointment. And this was just supposed to be, or we thought it was just going to be a regular checkup, get glasses, and move on with life. It was at that appointment that the ophthalmologist said, there's a major issue going on and I have to refer her to a retina specialist. So yeah, so it started by my mom and parents noticing, she's holding books a little bit closer than she did before.
Wow. That you were living it. And it's a weird thing to ask people about things they actually go through and try and compare them to things that other people don't go through because this was your lived experience. You don't know anything else. So you described this in the information you gave me as a traumatic transition. And I think that it's very easy for my mind to believe that as somebody who has their sight. I don't struggle with that at all, but I'd love for you to talk a little bit more about when that transition actually kicked in as a teenager and this thing that you had been told was going to happen began to actually happen. Like what was that like and how did it feel?
Yeah. So the huge, why I say traumatic transition, I had to completely transition from basically full sight to over time no sight. So I didn't just wake up one day and all of a sudden have no sight. It was gradual, but yet it was quick because it was over those 4 years. So I would lose a significant amount of sight and then it would plateau for a while. And then I would lose a significant amount of sight and then it would plateau for a while. So again, it wasn't just dramatic. I went to bed with full sight and woke up with no sight. Yet in those teenage years that are so difficult anyway, you're trying to figure out who you are and all you want to do is fit in. I was going through the trauma and the grief of, I have to grieve what I'm actively currently losing.
Yeah, I wondered about grief. That was the thing that was bouncing around in my head, but I didn't want to guess. It is so in my family, we wear glasses. And so for three out of the four kids, we've had a moment where we realize that their vision needs adjustment. And then we watch them as it's corrected and they realize how different the vision is, how much they couldn't
Yes,
see.
couldn't see, right?
Because when the vision is changing, even in a situation that's not like yours, you don't necessarily actually notice it until somebody points out something that you can't see.
100%.
And so I was thinking about that, but we did not have nobody, we've never had the sensation where there's the awareness that it's going to continue to progress.
Yes.
And I was trying to think about how that would feel for somebody so young, because you don't really have a concept of being able to lose anything.
Right. So it is an incredibly difficult grieving process of knowing how easy life was without sight, grieving knowing what I don't have. So that was a very intense depression and anxiety time because it was so overwhelming. The grief was overwhelming. Trying to figure out how to adapt life was overwhelming. The present was overwhelming. The future was overwhelming. Again, it was just incredibly difficult grieving process.
And you were a teenager, and teenagers are not known for their emotional stability, I gotta be
Right.
honest.
Especially girls, right?
My experience with the emotionality, that's not a real word, but the emotion ability, whatever the word is, of the both genders, is that teenagers can be fickle, no matter if they're boys or girls.
Yes.
So you experienced depression, you say, you experienced grief,
Yes.
sadness. Did you get some teenage rage in there, like anger at your situation in
Yes.
the world?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so you were experiencing this firsthand. You're young. Your parents and your family are guiding you or doing their best to guide you through this.
Yes.
Is there any familial connection, anybody in your family that had any kind of experience walking the road of vision impairment?
Zero
So it's new for everybody.
for everyone. Yes.
That cannot have been easy. All right,
No.
so let's talk about some pragmatic things of being a teenager going through this. Your parents are your support team. Did you stay in the same school and social community the whole time?
Yes, I did. And that was the gift, as I was incredibly anxious and depressed and overwhelmed with the grief. The gift was the support system around me. So I was able to stay in the same high school by teachers making accommodations, by learning Braille, by learning technology that made the computer accessible, and the gift of social. Having those friends that still continue to be my friends that I knew my whole life. They just because my sight wasn't as good, they didn't just disappear. Clearly, I have those people, those friends that did, it was just too much for them to handle. They didn't know what to say or do, so they did disappear. But my close connections, close friends, they were an incredible gift of you're still you. And I laugh at this gift now. It didn't feel like a gift then, but another very healing gift was I have one older brother. He's 5 years older. And as he continued to treat me like his little annoying sister that drove him crazy every day, all the time, that was a gift because he continued to treat me normal. He didn't, okay, you're not going to annoy me anymore because you can't see. I still drove him crazy. So at the time, I was like, you're so mean. You're such a mean brother. But that was the greatest gift he could have given me, just treating me normal.
Absolutely. So your school was able to make accommodations with, so you learned Braille. Which
Yes.
I'm guessing you learned that from, not everybody knows that. So I'm guessing you learned that from a specialty
Yeah.
source. Yeah.
So rather than going to art and music and PE, all the extra activities in school, I worked with a vision teacher on learning Braille and different techniques.
Within the school curriculum, like so within your
Right.
school day. That's
Right.
amazing. Okay, that's amazing. If you had asked me how that happened, I would have guessed that you had to go outside of school to a private specialty, but say brought in resources. What can I ask, what years were you in school or in high school?
Great question. All right, so I graduated in 2003.
Okay, so because the technology has dramatically shifted. Yes. There's a lot more resources. So you were able to use some technology in the school setting where the software would talk to you and help you read things that were on screen.
Right. And that was an incredible, again, that was a gift that as I'm anxious, as I'm depressed, I had to develop that mindset of being grateful for what I did have, being grateful that there was a software that we could load onto the computer and make it accessible. So it was all that, that helped me move through the grief process, through the anxiety, through depression, changing that mindset.
And I, you did definitely say that, that you've talked about having the awareness to be able to work on your mental state and your mindset. I think that that's very, very aware and very prescient, especially for someone as young as you were. So I was wondering, as I was thinking about that, you know, as a 15-year-old, you know, living your life, how, like, were you able at that time to like focus on those things? Or is that something that you're aware that you like, it's like a rear view mirror kind of thing. It's like, oh, that's when I began to work on this.
Totally rear view.
Okay.
Totally rear view. So in the moment as a 15-year-old, I was not saying, wow, I have so much grit. Like, this will all work out. It was all the perspective of focusing back. I realized. And again, the reason I was able to do all that was because of the support around me. So I can't say that enough, that as we go through change, as we navigate uncertainty and trauma, our support system, at least for me, was crucial. In when I didn't think I had the strength, they were telling me every day through your act, through their actions, you do have the strength, you can keep going.
So when we talk about this, we talked about your parents and your brother, and then who else was part, would you say was part of this support system when you were going through this transition?
So another huge support system was my guide dog. So I decided to, between high school and college, to get a guide dog. And that was an incredibly healing experience. And again, that was the time when I had to make the shift and the mindset perspective of, okay, I've had so much support around me. At some point, I had to accept and decide to have the courage, to have the grit, to have the gratitude for myself. The support system just couldn't do it for me forever. So getting that guide dog, yes, obviously was an incredible, valuable resource to physically keep me safe as I navigate the world, yet also it gave me the confidence of, I choose this grit, I choose the gratitude, I choose to have the courage for myself to move forward.
Yeah, so in the guide dog would give you another layer of independence.
Right, 100%.
Yeah,
100%.
That's it. So one of the things, so I am not sure that the next thing I'm going to ask is like a truly great question, but I'm going to ask it anyway because I'm like that. The majority of the people that are watching and listening to this show have never experienced life as you have.
Right.
And there's this weird phenomenon where it's very hard to actually imagine something we've never experienced, right? We can pretend and we can guess, but when you actually go through it, all of the stories I tell, you know, there's so many times where it's like, I thought I knew what this was going to be, and then it happened and I did not. I'd love to take some time and talk about some of the ways that your days and your life are quite potentially very different from somebody else who is moving through with sight. I think back to when I was in high school. I don't even know. I definitely had no experience with somebody my own age who had a significant vision impairment. I had experience running into them in the world, but not within my high school. So talk us like through, what was your day like at that time? Like what were some of the things that you did that you maybe have the awareness are very different for us?
Obviously, life is very, very different without sight because you're doing everything auditorily, you know, by hearing or, you know, using the technology. So in our huge differences, again, what every day was like was mentally surviving the day from a mindset, emotional perspective. That was the hardest part. That was the most difficult transition of, yes, learning Braille was hard. Yes, having my books and audio took a lot longer, and to complete my homework at night was double or triple the time that it took someone with sight. Yes, that was hard. Yet the hardest part was the emotional mindset piece.
Okay. What was it like moving through like this space? So when you were in high school, the space itself, the building and the facility, was it a challenge for you? How did you navigate the day finding the classrooms, learning the things? Were there other vision impaired students that were on the campus, or were you, what kind of adaptations did you make? Because at that point you didn't have the dog.
Yeah, so at that point, I didn't have the dog, and I had a lot more vision than I have now. So okay. We would make accommodations, and this is where both the grit and the gratitude come in. So one of the accommodations that we made was I would leave class literally like 2 minutes before the bell would ring at the end of each class.
Okay.
And the point was that I could go from class on the first floor to class on the third floor, and I would be in my next place when the bell rung. So then when hundreds of students are in the hallway, I'm already safely to the next class.
That was what I was thinking. Like in a crowded situation with a bunch of self-centered teenagers, I was trying to imagine how that worked.
Yes.
And I didn't want to guess. I didn't want to guess.
Right. Assume. And again, that's where the emotional mindset piece comes in when we experience difficulty and change. I did not want to be different. I absolutely hated being that one person. Why is she getting like 2 minutes before class? I want to leave. I didn't want to have to be different. Yet I had to learn. And all this was, again, through mentors, through my support. It wasn't through me as a teenager realizing this. I had to realize that was a source of strength. Okay. Because in that moment, that's what I needed. That's what kept me safe. That's what kept me in my high school and moving forward towards graduation, was making that accommodation. So yes, while I did not like being different and standing out, that I'm the one girl leaving the class, walking down the hall by herself, I had to learn that that's just a part of my new normal. And how do I be grateful that they have made that accommodation so I could get to the next class safely, rather than being stuck in that anxiety and depression of, I don't like this, and so I'm not going to receive this accommodation.
Which when you say that, you say it so eloquently and so calmly, but I think that in the moment, it must have really been very hard.
Oh, it was incredibly difficult because, again, I was fighting being different.
And it wasn't your choice. There was
right.
nothing, there's no other option out of there.
Right.
So I'd like to talk to you about the choices we make and how it impacts us. But there's also times where we have to adapt because we don't make the choice. You had friends that you had in your lifetime, and they were part of your school community. And so your social situation was strong. But when then graduated and went on to college, did you then shift social communities? And were you in a position where you had to meet new people and start and meet them where you were? Like, how did that sort of shake out when you were in college finding new friend groups?
Yeah, so that all goes back to, again, our emotional mindset perspective. So the gift of college is that I wasn't the only person who was blind on campus. I wasn't the only guide dog user on campus. I wasn't the only person who had a disability. And the gift of that was it gave me the opportunity to regain my confidence and become confident in my new normal.
Okay.
So through the college experience, I had the gift of being on a large campus. So yes, there are students with disabilities. There are students without disabilities. I mean, clearly students with disabilities are the minority, but yet I still wasn't the only one. So it gave me the opportunity to be comfortable in my own skin. And what I found was, I was comfortable in my new normal. And yes, I'm a person who's blind, and I'm also so much more. Like, I'm not just the blindness. As I learned that and became comfortable in that, the friendships, the social was natural. Because we could connect around similar interests. We could connect around our major. You know, we're majoring in the same thing. It gave me an incredible opportunity, again, from that mindset perspective, that in change, we can have that confidence and know that our new normal is just who we are, and be okay with that.
I love that. One of the things that I was thinking about this, because we were talking about school and the age at which you experienced this, was the choices that you were thinking about as a kid, like what you wanted to study in university, what you wanted to pursue as a job, and those kind of things. And I wondered if you'd talk a little bit about how did you, were there things that popped up where you had to make a decision like, well, I'm not, not on the table for me to be a pilot.
Literally, that's what I was getting ready to say.
I mean, because we look at that, as when we're young, and all of us have strengths and weaknesses. But there's also this like sort of counter idea that we feed youngsters, which is sort of anything is possible, chase your dreams. But you had the very, very real situation where it's like maybe not everything is for me. So how did that,
Right.
are there things that you thought about that you were like, no, these are my options. This is when I look at doing these are things I'm interested in, these are my options. How did that feel for you?
So definitely, literally what you were saying, a pilot, is exactly what I was going to say. Well, I'm not going to be an architect, and I'm not going to be a pilot. And so I majored in psychology for two reasons. One, because I was just passionate about that anyway, but more so because of my lived experience. Because of the traumatic transition, because of the grief process, I wanted to understand, from a psychological perspective, how do we heal? How do we grieve and move forward at the exact same time? So I didn't just want to study it for my understanding. I wanted to study it for my understanding and to be able to help others as they go through grief and loss. Because, as you referred to earlier, this experience is very, very unique. Yet the human experience of anxiety and depression and grief, we all experience. So that's why I majored in psychology, to have a better understanding of how we navigate through the anxiety, through the depression.
All right, so we're going to talk a little bit about what you do these days in a minute. When you were studying psychology, did you have an idea or a vision of a job that you thought you wanted in the future? Were you thinking of being a clinician, being a therapist? Like, what were the things that were in your
Yes.
mind?
I was definitely thinking about being a therapist. And then towards the end of college, when I was thinking about career, you know, next, it was the grad school or whatever was next, that's when I wanted my focus to be a holistic mind, body, spirit connection. While I'd spent those 4 years focusing on the psychology and our cognitive perspective, I also knew that so much of my healing was spiritual, it was emotional, it was physical, it was all of it combined. It wasn't just one part of me. So that's when I decided to go on to my master's in theology, so I could focus on an academic perspective and connect all of us, so it could be a holistic perspective of healing.
So I didn't know either of those things. So you majored in psychology in undergrad, and then you went on and you studied theology for the spiritual side of it.
Yes, to be able to focus on, again, that how, as we as humans, how do we heal, again, to become comfortable in our own skin? And that comes through so many different modalities, not just the psychological.
It does. And I will say, so earlier I said something like there's this experience you have where you know it's a thing that can happen, but until it happens to you, you just don't know what it's going to feel like. I have probably done seven or eight interviews about grief unrelated to, personal experience where people experience that. They say, of course we know that we can have this, but we do a pretty terrible job, which is weird, getting each other ready For grief.
Yes.
Which is kind of a crazy thing. So I love that that was your focus. All right.
Yes.
So you wrote a book.
Yes.
You have written a book. You call it Harnessing Courage. It's not new. It's been out since 2016, I think.
Yes.
Overcoming Adversity with Grit and Gratitude, a definite theme of today's conversation. How did you decide to write the book? Like, talk us through like how that came about.
So there were two reasons for the book. The main reason, the goal of the book was, as I realized the support, as you were saying, that rear view mirror, as I realized the incredible support that I had from so many different people and places, I wanted to be able to write a book that could be a resource for people as they're going through any type of change and loss, that they can use that as a resource, as support, to be that support to them that I received. So what I didn't want to do is say, okay, I've received all the support, that's great for me. I wanted to go and be that support in the world. So that was the reason, that was the passion for the book. So I tell my story and I tell it through the perspective of grit and gratitude, how I use each of those resources. The title of the book was very deliberate. So the harness is what is the leather strap that goes around the dog, and the human holds the handle of the harness. So as you walk forward as a team, the guide dog is guiding you as you're holding the harness. So I named it Harnessing Courage. I titled it Harnessing Courage as a respect for the two. So I've had two guide dogs. Each of the guide dogs gave me that courage to physically move through the world.
Yeah.
So that was the main reason I named Harnessing Courage. The second reason was just the emotional mindset perspective of every single day, it takes so much courage to choose to move forward. When we face change, when we face loss, when we're in the midst of grief, that's intense courage to choose not to be overwhelmed and shut down by the grief, by the loss. So that's why the title was very, very deliberate, very specific.
I love that. One of the reasons that the theme of this show is so broad is that in my own lived experience, just going through the things that I've done, I realized, because people would challenge me on it, people would push me on it, certain things, that we sometimes teach the skills of adapting to change in very, very specific ways. You know, this is how we handle this one, and this is how we handle this one. But in reality, it's actually almost always the same steps.
Yes.
Whether we are talking about a challenge like you're going through, which is a very physical challenge, or a grieving challenge, or a life stage challenge where your identity is shifting, the process is often very similar. So I love the way you explain that. All right. So you didn't just write a book. You also have founded your own company, which I'm going to say it, and if I say it wrong, you correct me. Is it Ubi?
Yes.
Ubi Global. This is an organization that provides speaking and coaching to empower people to overcome challenges and obstacles with grit and gratitude. Love it. Yes. So I want to hear all about this. Did you, when you graduated from school, did you go through a period where you were looking for jobs with other people, or did you launch straight into building your global empire, writing a book as an entrepreneur?
No, yeah, I didn't. So
okay.
I didn't just graduate from college and start an LLC.
People do. Don't get me
absolutely.
Wrong. So yeah. So, but yes. I was curious. So, all right. So Ubi Global, tell us where did that come from, what is it?
So the passion for the speaking and the coaching is the exact same as the passion for the book. So I wanted to do something, again, that could support people as I had received that support. Because I know through my lived experience, the difficulty of going through loss, of going through change. So through the speaking, through the coaching, through the book, it's my goal to be that support and be that voice to say, yes, this is really, really hard. So we can acknowledge the hard, we can acknowledge the grief, we can acknowledge the pain, and choose to move forward. We can do both at the same time. It's not one or the other.
Yeah, it almost has to be at the same time because the time doesn't stop. I've not experienced what you have gone through, but my limited experience with grief, one of the just gobsmacking experiences that I was completely overwhelmed with the sensation of grief, and I would find myself in a situation just stunned by the fact that the rest of the world was moving forward.
Absolutely.
How can you do this? How can you be going to movies and go to the grocery store? Don't you see I'm in this enormous pain?
How
So
can you be laughing?
how can you be laughing? Exactly. But the thing is that life continues to move forward. And I think that it is very, very tuned in that you are so aware of the fact that it is a major action step. It is a lot of work to make the choice to keep moving forward. I think that when you have a story like yours where the change was very overt and dynamic and a big part of your life, that's true, but it's also the action of going from class to class. Because at some point, there probably was a time where if you had said to your parents, I don't want to, they might have been like, yeah, we get it, and let
We
you
get
not
it.
do it.
Absolutely. And that was the gift they gave me. And that's why I focus so much on grit. I absolutely said that a million times. And the gift of the support was, I know we get it. It's really hard. And so all we have to do is the next hour.
Okay, this really moved the goalpost. Like, we're just going to do this hour and then we're going to talk about it again.
And then we'll do the next hour. So focusing on the whole future was absolutely overwhelming. All we had to focus on was the next hour, the next 30 seconds.
Just and move it as close as you need to know that you're going to make it. Yeah, I think that's very good. All right, so I want to, in a second, we're going to do the final fun questions, but I want to give you a chance to directly talk about how people can connect with you and find you after the interview.
So the best way is my website, laurabratton.com, has all the resources for the speaking, the coaching, the book, all the information, getting in connection, all that is on the website.
Very, very nice. I'm going to put that link in the show notes so everybody who's listening to it on a podcast player, it's there. If you're watching the episode on YouTube, it's in the show notes. If you are subscribed to my email community, which everybody should do because that's the best way to get these links, then it zips into your email box and you can just click on it. So that's the easiest way to do it. So, Laura, are you ready for
I'm
the
ready.
final questions? Are very, very good. Okay. If I invited you over for dinner and I said, Laura, I want to make you your very favorite meal for dinner, what would you say? What is your favorite meal?
Seafood.
What kind of seafood? Like scallops, or what do you like?
Shrimp, fish. I love, love, love seafood,
Okay.
which obviously I love the beach. I love everything connected to the beach.
Very good. All right, very good. Okay, so we are you so when you read Braille, but you also would listen to audiobooks, what is the last book that you read or listened to that you really enjoyed?
So, but this actually helped me both professionally and personally. I love, love, loved winning friends and influencing people.
Oh, from D Dale Carnegie, the old book? That is an old book. I think that was
It's
written in
so,
the as when oh, so very so then you the only thing I remember from reading that book is the importance and the value of referring to people by their name. When he says,
the personal connection. And that's so valuable socially and professionally. That's why I love, that's the book that first came to mind because it applies in so many different areas of our life.
It does. It does. And so that's a good one. All right, very good. So do you have or have you ever had sort of a bucket list, a list of things that you want to do in the future, things of all kind of things? And if you do you want to share with us one of the things that you still hope to accomplish off your list?
So I love traveling. So definitely on my bucket list is lots of traveling. There's not one specific place, just I love traveling. So visiting new places and exploring, absolutely love it.
What's the first, what, like, if you could pick any place to go next, do you have a place that you is on the top of your list that you would like to experience?
Honestly, anywhere with a beach.
Anywhere with a beach.
I love, love, love experiencing different types of beaches. I just love it. So, yes.
That is a phenomenal answer. Laura, thank you so much for being a wonderful guest onto the show today.
Thank you for the gift and thank you for this platform.
You got it. Hold on, I'm going to hit. Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obviously, again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.